Welcome to Bold Talk Radio. I am your host, Pat Williams, and thank you so much for joining us this Sunday afternoon, just the day before Christmas Eve. So hopefully you guys are enjoying all of your shopping and got most of that done. But I did keep a promise. So my gift to you guys as the audience, I've been promising you that we would have author Robert A. St. Thomas on the show to discuss his book, The Riddle of Oz. And so joining us today, we have author Robert A. St. Thomas. Robert, how are you this afternoon?
I'm fine, Pat. How are you?
I'm doing great, Robert. Thank you so much for joining us. Did you get all your Christmas shopping done?
No, I haven't. I've been quite busy in the hospital. And actually, Pat, I don't even know what to give family members of my children anymore. I mean, they have about everything, whether it's a smartphone, television, computer. I simply don't know what to do. I probably don't break down and do some gift certificates and some money, because I simply don't know what to give kids nowadays. Unlike when I was a kid, I looked forward to a watch or some sort of toy or something. But I have not Christmas.
Well, listen, shame on you. Listen, you better take it back old school. When I was coming up as a kid, here's what you got. You got a pair of socks and a pair of drawers, and it was Merry Christmas. There you have it.
That's pretty much how I came up.
My parents are going to kill me. They're going to say, that's not true. We got you everything else. But we did have a pair of socks and a pair of drawers in there. You best believe it. Underoos were king on Christmas morning. But anyway, Robert, surely I jest, and let's just get on into it. So, Robert, let's just jump right into it. Why did you write this book, Riddle of Oz? What was your inspiration for it?
Well, my inspiration was my father. He's the primary inspiration. We were raised Roman Catholic. I'm Christian. My dad wanted to be a civil rights attorney when I found him a little bit later. His interest, though, he was into, electronics. He was an engineer. Okay? He was into radar and guidance and all this stuff during the Cold War period of the 60s. But the 60s was an interesting period of time. You know, it was the best of times and it was the worst of times. But we couldn't, as kids, understand the turmoil that was going on in the 60s. At least I didn't. But what my dad would do, he would sit down with my brother and I, and we'd sit with these fireside chats. In fact, my story takes place in 1969. And he basically sits down during the summer of 1969, actually just a few days before the first man on the moon with Neil Armstrong, and he was sort of explaining what was going on in this world and the effect that the Cold War was having on the United States. I left influences because I had the story in my heart for a long time. Wizard of Oz, it sounds like my title, had a huge influence on me. A couple of movies, Cooley High, Good Times, and even Star Wars. All these things that sort of subliminal message of it. Eventually it came out. But just recently, I was able to put all my thoughts together on paper to help explain what's going on. Now, I do believe that to understand the present, one must look into the past to the answer. Because who controls the past? Who controls the future? Who controls the present? Who controls the past? Mm-hmm. So again, the answers to what's going on in 2018 could be found in the past. But I settled in on 1969, because you might say that was like my age of awareness. My eyes were opening, my coming out period. And that's where he was explaining the things that I couldn't get from, say, teachers or my friends, but he was basically revealing what was going on in America. So his voice is coming through me, and I basically tried to echo that out to other people. There's a moral behind my story, and that's basically what I'm trying to get out.
Gotcha. Now, Robert, let me ask you just flat out. I mean, is this book, well, what's the target audience for this book? I mean, because you deal with a lot of, before you answer and tackle that, you deal with a lot of, let's put it this way, you deal with a myriad of issues here. You're dealing with race, you're dealing with religion. We're going to get into more of that. As you know, this is actually just the first part of a 5-part series. So we appreciate you taking time out to really discuss your book, because it just deserves more than just one interview. It's really expansive, and I think our audience will find it very intriguing. But who is their target market audience for this book? Who are you trying to reach with this?
Good question. On the surface, I would say anyone in general, but I would say black men, Christian white males would be my second group, but probably black males in particular. Black males in particular.
Okay. Go right ahead.
Yeah, which is probably one of my subtitles of my book is Father Knows Best. And I'm trying to convey with that subtitle the importance of men in their role in society, especially in family. And my talking the type of that hero that conveyed these types of virtues into my brother and I. And so I want to, my target audience would be black men who, since the 60s, have got bad rap in terms of, being there for their families. The black families in shambles as far as, mothers having to raise these kids by themselves because the fathers have been lured away, but she was lured away from their primary responsibilities, as breadwinners, providers, promoters, and a word I like to use, paladins. They've been lured away from that. So, but they're black males, are probably my number one target audience. Christian, conservative, white males would probably be my second. But anybody can read anybody. But if I had to sit down with two groups, people, those would be the children. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like it's definitely targeting. I mean, if we could just make it just really shoot from the hip and make it plain, it sounds as if you're really targeting males with it. I hear you very strongly. Primarily, like you said, you're targeting black men, but also, like you said, conservative white Christian males. Now, let me ask you, because you gave me a really good detailing as to why or how it targets, your audience would be more palatable to a black male audience. But how so on the white conservative Christian side? You'd almost think that those two are somewhat of a dichotomy or diametrically opposed.
Well, I believe God put men on this world for those four purposes: that provider, protector, promoter, and a paladin. Whatever race of man you are, I think men are supposed to be leaders of society. Now, what has happened, I found, with white males is that they have adopted liberalism into a lot of their beliefs, primarily with the church.
But what about black males? Wouldn't you say that holds true for black males as well?
Without question. Black men, I believe, have been under so much duress, with this racism type thing, that they've kind of lost their focus in terms of what their role is supposed to be. Now, this is going to sound, we're not trying to insult black males, but you have standard people your white, conservative, Christian male, I believe, are trying to follow the standard that the founders did. I'm not talking about the slavery part of the founders, but I'm talking about a moral standard that I believe that all men should follow. I think they have some light. I think they have light that is beneficial to all men. The problem is, black men have been confused by various types of adversaries to steer him off a particular course. There's something that the white male has to offer, okay? And I believe that in this day and age, black men have become adversarial to conservative Christian values.
But why do you think so, Robert? I mean, because forgive me for jumping in, but I know the audience is probably thinking these things along with me as well. Why do you think that Christian conservative values have become somewhat of a turnoff to Black men today?
Yeah, I think it goes back to this myth that in some way Christianity was the white male or white man's religion, mm-hmm. and
Jesus is the white God, huh?
That's right. It's an opium of the Black mass to control him, that type of thing. I think you've heard that before.
Sure.
And I think that's the issue. I think the adversaries to Christianity have used that as a wedge against conservative white Christian males. Well, I do believe they are people of goodwill, but this Christianity is vilified because it's associated with slavery. Okay, How could something from God be so good if it's associated with so much misery and
suffering and pain? But Robert, let me just jump in and speak on that, just because you're hitting something that I really, and this is fascinating, and I know you deal with variations of this throughout the book, but what you and I both know, even though you come from a medical field, but you're a very learned individual, very well researched, very well studied. And here's what I know, where you're going with this, and I just kind of want to throw this out there for the sake of the audience. What's so funny is how slavery has been associated with Christianity, but any real student of history, and I know you'll agree with this, and I want you to kind of expound on it once I put it on the table, any true student of history knows that slavery, if you look at it in terms of the presentation that Hollywood gives us, right? If you watch any of these from Roots to Django to any of these movies, I mean, they're always showing you the white guy with the whip and the Bible in his hands, you know, quoting out scriptures to, you know, to Kunta Kinte and slaves. But if you really study history, we will find that the white men forbade one another to teach the Bible to the Black slaves. Let me put that on the table. I want you to address that.
Well, I believe that's one of the reasons why Black slaves were forbidden to read anything, especially the Bible. And if they did read, you know, if they were able to go through the Bible, they would come across some things like the Bible forbids slavery, especially the individual away from his land or his family and basically being made a slave. Now, of course, if you didn't read the Bible, then, you know, you wouldn't know that existed. You would just assume that these people were following a recommendation from God. Now, if you remember, one problem that has come up, and I remember as a kid hearing that, is this issue with Noah and his three sons. If you remember, there's a passage in the Bible where It appears that one of Noah's sons sees Noah laying naked. Okay, that's when I was a kid, that's how it came across. He saw his son laying naked. The two other brothers, Shem and Japheth, were so embarrassed by this that they dragged Ham out of this situation of looking at their father. And Noah wakes up, and then, you know, he's embarrassed, so he decides to put in a curse on Ham, and that's been perverted down through years to believe that Black people suffered this curse from Ham, and to call the Bible, Black people were supposed to then be essentially servants of Shem and Japheth for the rest of their lives. Now, of course, that's a complete distortion of what went on. If you remember in the Bible, the curse falls on Canaan, who apparently was Noah's grandson.
Right.
From the ark.
Right.
Grandson of the,
that's right.
And remember, Canaan were these people that ultimately became this terrible group of people known as Canaanites. Okay. For the most part, they were just like opposed to anything pure, soulfully good. They were basically into, you know, sex, perversion, you name it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's but it is perverted to believe that black people were and stuff with this curse of Canaan, which is not true. They had nothing to do. Of course, if you don't read and you don't study, then you just believe what an authority figure tells you.
Exactly.
And, you know, and then you just buy into, well, this authority figure. So the snow job that many whites were using to appease their conscious conviction, when they went to the Bible, the word's right there. It's right there. You see, here's the curse right here. This is why this is place. So, but we know that's wrong. That's not a thing. I'm just saying that, you know, ignorance is bliss, but it's mostly blister, okay? If you don't know the truth, if you don't know the truth, then folks can basically pull the wool over your eyes if you don't investigate. So that's why I would say that much. But what I'm saying is that Christianity is a set of principles that is that applicable to anybody who's interested in living in peace. And that's all it is to it. Mm-hmm. Anybody that's interested in peace, follow Christian principles, you'll do well. Okay.
Now, what about someone who would say, but Islam is also a religion of peace. Buddhism is also offers a lot of peace. I mean, you have Nirvana, the Hindi religion also. I mean, what would you say to that argument if someone says, well, is Christianity the only religion that offers peace? Islam offers peace, Buddhism, you know, so on and so forth. How would you respond to that type of you know, retort?
Well, now we come into the realm of religion versus God. Now, religion and God, specifically Jesus, are two different things. Religions are man-made, set the rule to basically keep a society in order. But there's some divinity behind it, but it's kind of this weird, nebulous, we don't really know what's going on type thing, right? And people are reaching out to something that they don't really have a clear idea what's going on. But there's a morality in everybody that they believe, you know, if they pursue certain areas of morality, then everything will be okay. The difference between, say, Christianity, this story is different, and that is, this entity in a spiritual realm has come down to man, as opposed to the other way around. Man has sought to go up to God. You know, this is a story about an entity that has come down into flesh and blood form and basically has told people, hey, this is a way to get back to me if you do these things. Mm-hmm. Okay, a little bit different. Christianity is chronicled differently. I mean, we're celebrating Christmas coming up, and this was foretold before Jesus ever showed up. Mm-hmm. This was foretold by hundreds. No one else in history that I know of has had this birth foretold. In other words, like my mom and dad didn't know when I was going to show up. Your mom and dad didn't know when they were showing up. You didn't even know where your birth city was going to be. You know, there's things about this, about Jesus, where we know that, you know, his birthday, where he was going to be born, what kind of deeds he would perform, you know, where he was going to die, you know, what he was going to do after he died. I mean, and it's chronicled for what? So, there's more truth to that.
Okay, but now, Robert, let me just jump in here and say, now let's put it, because we do want to tie it right back into your book, because in your book, you address religion very thoroughly. And that's why I'm just kind of laying back and letting you rightfully so, you know, kind of lay out the groundwork for that. But then let's put it, as you do in the book, into a more practical or pragmatic sense for the audience. So let's say that I'm a Muslim, or let's even go another step. Let's say that I'm an atheist, and I decide I want to buy this book, The Riddle of Oz. What could I, let's say being an atheist or an agnostic or of any other belief or creed, what can I get from this book? I mean, is your book going to offend me if I'm not a Christian?
Christianity has a way of offending people.
Well, my old timer say the real kind. The old time religion has a way of doing that.
It comes right out of the block telling you things that people don't want to hear. It's the only thing to tell people that you're bad. Most people don't want to hear that. Most people say, well, I'm good and society may be bad, or I'm neutral and society may be bad. But right out the block, Jesus comes out on the mound, he's throwing fastball, telling everybody that you're bad.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't hear that.
But are you doing that though, Robert? Are you telling people, hey guys, we all kind of suck? Is that the thrust of your book, or are you using Christianity, which you made clear is your faith, are you using that as the backdrop and the premise to texturize a knowledge, a wisdom, which was the term you used earlier, a wisdom that you want to get out to the audience? Do you feel where I'm getting with that?
I like the way you frame it. In my book, what I try to do is remind people, yes, that we're, all people are bad, okay? Wicked. We're in a fallen state. People who have this desire to want to be good, but they just don't know how to go about doing it. But anyway, when they live amongst people, we're not done with this. Broken down morality in the three forms that we see in our society. We see what's known as relative morality. Religious morality, and then the ultimate form of morality, I think it's called Christianity. So you have mild, moderate, and really severe forms of morality. I think Christianity is not as negative, but as your highest form of truth. Your highest form of truth. I see religious morality as like that middle ground. It's like, well, I want to be good, don't steal from me, this, that, and the other. And that's a way of appealing to people. But then there's this relative morality where, you know, situational ethics, that type of thing, what's good now, you know, this is, you know, I can steal like a Dirk Petrini, you know, it's all right for me to steal ice boxes and TV sets and stuff like that because ridiculous, but bring it down to that's how human beings want to deal with their conscience. They want to deal with their conscience either through relative morality, religious morality, absolute morality. And I'm saying that if you truly want to pursue the truth, you pursue the truth of Christian morality, because that is the light, that's the truth. Let me ask you this. I'll offend people, but in the sake of what I'm trying to get across, let me ask you this question. What is the symbol of Islam?
Now, hopefully I'll get this right, and I certainly don't want to offend our Muslim listeners, but from what I understand, the symbol, if you're talking about in the symbology of it, I believe it's the crescent, right? Isn't it the crescent moon?
Crescent moon. Okay. Crescent moon, right. We agree with that. Okay. My question to you is this. Does the moon cast its own light?
No, it's a reflection. Now I've got to go back to my science class. If I remember this as a kid, it's reflecting, right?
It's reflecting, but it's not the real deal, okay? It's not the real deal, okay? Symbolically, Christianity or Jesus is the light, okay? Okay, so you cannot get truth from a reflection. Okay,
now, Robert, I got to stop you and jump in and say this. So, because I want to frame this now. Like you say, you're saying some really powerful and some very controversial things. And that's what I want you to do. That's why this is called Bold Talk Radio. I'm not here to be, you know, politically correct. And I appreciate you giving me just your honesty and your truth. But let me frame it this way to you. Now, I'll put it to you like this. If let's say that I was a Muslim and you're telling me that, okay, Jesus is the truth. Well, Jesus says that himself. I'm the way, the truth, and the life. But right then and there, as you say, this is somewhat of a wall that, you know, kind of comes between people. And I believe why a lot of people, especially in our day and time, have a problem with Christianity. And we started out our question trying to figure out why it does it seem as if Black males in particular, but I would even say Black people in general, male or female, there seems to be this shift in the Black community pulling away from those old, like they said, the old time religion, the old Christian values. But I would say that's true across the board, that Christianity is taken in this day and time as being a religion that's not inclusive of others who are different or who look a certain way. So my question to you, Robert, pure and simple, is this. Do you want to come off just presenting material that just really is going to lead someone right to Christianity, right to Christ? Or are you trying to present information to anybody who's willing to pick up the book? I just want you to address that.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, another very good question. Yeah, the book is broken down into 18 chapters, and they're a little snippet of history during the period, during the summer of 1969. Summer of 69. Okay, tie that as well. There it is. Mm-hmm. And what we're trying to do with each snippet is to show in a logical form why the truth of Christianity are, how do you say, they're more alluring. They tell the truth, that if you give it a chance, it'll play itself out, that logically you're drawn towards this value system that steers you towards a higher way of thinking. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what we're trying to say. We're the principles laid down by Jesus and Paul are things where, for instance, someone asked me one time, what's the purpose of suffering Jesus? You know, a lot of Muslims have issues with that. Why would God want to bring, his son down to earth to suffer? Mm-hmm. And what I'm trying to get across with the principles of Christianity is that suffering is on earth is a necessity for us, okay? Mm-hmm. It's a necessity. Seduction away from Christianity is that people don't want to suffer any longer. Okay, they don't want suffering to be any part of their existence, which is satanic to me because it doesn't build character. See, black people as we came up, orphans and slaves, they were strongly people of faith. Okay, they believe it. Mm-hmm. They endured so much, but suffering improved their character. Mm-hmm. We are here now because of the character building of our ancestors. Okay, what has happened now to sabotage that character building is that we have adversaries who do not want us to suffer. Okay, we want everything to be easy. Okay. Things that are easy, you find that you have less reliance upon God, okay? Prayer, or having people pray for you, or our faith is based on suffering. Now, we're not talking about torture, anything like that. We're talking about things that, you know, if you deny yourself, if you deny yourself certain things, these are character-building virtues that we
want. Okay, but now, Robert, but now let me jump in and say this. Now, just for our Black audience listeners, I could just hear this just ringing off in my head as a bell. I mean, what if you, hearing you say that, what about a Black person who may be listening to you and may say, well, what the heck? I mean, Black people, haven't we suffered enough? We suffer every day. So what would you say to that? Because it seems to me, unless you're thinking that there has been some type of paradigm shift between 1960s, right, when you're referring to the time when you were a child and you know you were listening to your father, until now, we're almost in 2019, just a week out from that. Unless you're dealing with a paradigm shift, where has the suffering ended for Black people? And I know many would want to ask you that.
Well, here's the deal. You're right, there has been a shift. And what has occurred with the Black family, again, I think it's sort of a satanic type of seduction, because what has occurred is that where we stayed together as families through thick and thin, what has occurred is that the Black, or the male, especially the Black male, has been lured away from any form of suffering by seduction. For instance, it could be pornography. It could be another woman. It could be drugs. It could be a vacation in an exotic place where you can find happiness, like in Brazil. Or, in other words, rather than him understand that long suffering is just what it is on earth. I mean, that's what it is on earth. We're supposed to be here to prep us for our final encounter with Satan. Okay? Our final encounter with Satan. Life on earth isn't supposed to be about torturing, but it is about chastity. For instance, I can't wait to be really fanless, but here's what I'm talking about. On earth, the story with Adam and Eve was given, and let's include Adam in here, they were given three tests. They were given three tests to basically see their orientation if they would basically seek God. So the devil comes to Eve and he basically says, hey, look, you know, do you like this? You know, lust of the eye, lust of the flesh, pride of life. Those three things that he was telling her was saying, hey, look, here's a way of easing your suffering on earth and give you everything you want. You can be a god. You don't have to go through this, and you don't have to have reliance upon this god. So to be major, you can be your own god. Come with me. Here are the things that are going to prevent you from suffering, okay? Even Adam failed that. Next example we get is Jesus.
Right, but Robert, Robert, because I know we're getting a little short on time, but let's like I said, we want to bring that into what's happening right now in 2019. And I know, like I said, it's a very expansive book, because here's something that you said, and I want to just jump back to that, because you did say, yes, you're dealing with that shift, that paradigm. Let me ask you this question, just very direct. Then you talked about, you know, the luring of black men. Let me give you a statistic before I put my question out there. There was a statistic that I recently came across, and I believe it's with the Census Bureau of Statistics. And going back just 50 years ago, in 1968, there were 80% of all black children born in 1968, 80% of those children were born to a two-parent household, mom and dad. I believe that to be true. My eldest brother was born in 68. My parents were married. My other brother and myself, we were all born within the sanctity of marriage. You look at the statistic today in 2018, that has actually flipped almost completely in reverse, where in today's world, you only have 20%. Of all black children born in a two-parent household. So we definitely know there's a shift, but you mentioned the responsibility of that shift falls onto black men being lured. How are they lured, and who's doing the luring? I know we can get into the spiritual aspect of it's Satan, but what do you think is drawing the black male away from the structure of home? What is that?
Yeah, in one word, I would say communism. I would say the philosophy of communism. Philosophy of communism is like the worst, most evil philosophy that's ever come on the face of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is. It's anti-family. It's anti-God. It's anti-society. It's anti-personal responsibility. It's all these things.
Yeah, but most black guys would tell you, say, hey, man, I'm not a communist. I mean, most I would either say, they would say, hey, man, I'm a Christian, or many would say that they're Muslim, or, you know, it's kind of up in the air. Most black men wouldn't qualify themselves as being a communist. So how are they being affected by, as you say, communism?
Well, communism, you know, there's a couple of ways that you can control an individual, okay? You can control an individual up close, which can probably cause conflict. Or you can control an individual from a distance, where you can come at him with all kinds of tricks and snares and lures. And that's what that means. The average black person doesn't realize that communism has snuck up on him and is presently controlling him, pretty much like, you know, the rest of the country. I'll give you an example. In 1970, now my book is set in 1969, but in 1970, you had a two black artist, Lance Cohen and Gil Scott-Heron, they basically were promoting the idea that a revolution was coming quickly in the United States because of the injustices. And it sounded real good at the time. So the black poet basically made a statement that a revolution is coming. Gil Scott-Heron was saying, no, revolution is not going to come. In fact, it's not even going to be televised. And unfortunately, both missed the point that they were involved in a revolution that they didn't realize that they were part of. Okay? Mm-hmm. That communism had started taking root in this country in 1933. And in my book, that's where I start to illustrate how it came in a very stealth-like way. That they would go after, the first and foremost, the male, and start to entice him with things that would appeal to his more subconscious carnal desires. It would start to appeal to sex, drugs, escapism, fantasy, that type of thing. These are pleasurable things. These are things that the average human being would crave more than things like, let's go to church for 1 hour on Sunday. That's like an effort thing, but it doesn't take any effort to watch pornography. It doesn't take much effort to drink, so how these people decided to control the male, remember, the provider, the protector, the promoters, and the paladins of society, they basically started luring them away with pleasurable things. They started having them desire, the principle that Troy talked about. I mentioned that in my book also. I started doing the basis of basic psychology in here to see how really slick these people have been since 1933 in this country. So, anyway, the black males, again, who've been indoctrinated heavily now to hate Christianity, has been indoctrinated to hate something that will pull him downward towards his id, so to speak. And again, I'll explain that in some later talks. That's not the direction you want to go. Mm-hmm. So by pulling him towards his id, then he loses his sense of responsibility for the mother of his children. He loses his sense of responsibility for the children he's brought into this world. He loses his sense of responsibility for his neighbor's children. Because he's more interested in himself. He's into satisfying his own desires. And that's where the corruption was started.
Well, now, Robert, let me jump in, because this is very fascinating. Because if I could just sum up what you just said, just within those few sentences, it sounds as to me what you're saying is that statistic that I just threw out there, and what you're dealing with in the book, that the black male, because there seems to be, and I'll use a very biblical term here, very biblical jargon here, there seems to be a falling away from the black male in terms of Christian principles, Christian thought, and religiosity or pathology. It sounds to me you're saying because the black man have kind of shifted himself away from these timeless values that Christianity presents, this is what has made him more susceptible and prone to communism. Am I hearing you correct?
That's correct. You're absolutely right. See, one of the things is, if you talk to, a sample of black people, I don't know, maybe 60-70% will believe that Christianity is not a, for instance, how can I say it? Black people were not familiar with Christianity until the white man put it on them. And that's not true at all. That's not true at all. Now, you remember in the book of Acts, that, remember the story with the Ethiopian eunuch, okay, that basically was introduced to Christianity, okay, way, way, way back in Africa, okay, in other words, Christianity, long before it was a European thing, It was a black thing.
You're right. Well, Robert, let's just sidebar for a minute. Where then do you think this mindset have come in? Because I'll be honest with you, I plan to do another show where we're going to get into talking about the Bible and things of that sort. But you're right. I mean, I'm 45 years old, and what I've noticed is that there's a lot of bad misinformation. And I like to call it the Hollywood presentation of the Bible, because the reason why I say that is this. Like I said earlier, any real student of history, you don't even have to be a Christian. You can just be a student of history. And for anybody to think that black people, that the Negro American did not have Christ and did not know who Jesus or Christianity was prior to 1611 or 1619 or, you know, whatever year that was. It's almost laughable. It makes you sad. Like, where is that thought coming in? Is it coming through Hollywood? Is it coming through a lack of education in the schools? Where is this new thought coming in? Because, like, you know, yeah, go right ahead.
It's all the above. You brought up an excellent point. Like, for instance, like when you associate Roots and 12 years of slave type slavery stories, the villain is always the white male, okay? Mm-hmm. The slave, and again, as I mentioned before, you're dealing with somebody who got involved in an economic system that punished his conscience was convicting him so much that he had to find some sort of justification for abusing these people because he enjoyed making money off these people, okay, black people we're talking about. So in order to deal with his conscience, you know, this is when you started to dehumanize black people, you know, using the N-word or making them subhuman or chattel, that type of stuff. Remember, this is a way of giving conscience relief by saying, oh, they're slaves because, number one, it's in the Bible, they're not human, and I'm just their overseer, giving them a life that they wouldn't have, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, and I go into this in detail, where this misconception comes from. Because remember the people behind the slave trade, the Atlantic slave trade, or even the African slave trade, 800 years before the European came, were actually two groups of people. You're dealing with the Muslim, and you're dealing with the Jewish people. Those are your two great enslavers of black people, okay? Now, the Christians, the white Christians, basically, how can you say, they sort of got, you know, they sort of went along with this evil when basically they saw how they could profit off of a institution that they really didn't want to have anything to do with, okay? Mm-hmm. But like I said, once money has a way of corrupting people. Money has a way of corrupting people. Mm-hmm. Wealth has a way of corrupting it. This is where the problem comes in. So in my book, I tried to explain, you know, for instance, the Catholics. I'm Catholic, but the Catholics are the greatest perpetuators of slavery. There were more blacks went to South America than they came to North America, and especially America, which was a Protestant-based country. But all your Catholic-based countries were heavily into slavery. Mm-hmm. But there's a reason behind that, and I tried to explain that in the book. There's a reason why the Catholics became corrupted and embraced the institution of slavery. But remember, prior to either the Europeans being involved, the Muslims had a long-standing economic trade situation with the black Africans in Africa long before this. So Christians were the ones that put a stop to it, okay? But Christians are blamed as being the perpetuators of it. And again, that comes from Hollywood, and basically just man's nature of wanting to hate anything that's telling him how to be a better person, you know. That's where it's coming from. But you're absolutely right. But I think most of our public don't understand that the perpetuators of the slave situation that we're, you know, that has given, you know, that has most attention has been done by the Muslims first. The Jewish people basically could have really made it an enterprise, but it could have never been done without black people in Africa going along with it.
Wow.
And, you know, that's what we tried to get across. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll put it by the truth to make you free, okay? That's mm-hmm. what this book is all about. Let's look at this stuff objectively. Tear this stuff apart to see, you know, to break down these misconceptions, these myths, these untruths about people and this particular faith that I believe in.
Well, now, Robert, let me jump in and say, because you're reminding me of something here. And actually, we're going to go about maybe five more minutes and then we'll wrap it. But one of the things you're making me think about, and, it, you know, it's funny, I'm at that age, that middle age, where I'm young enough to kind of keep my finger on the pulse of what's happening with these 20, 30 something year olds. But I'm also old enough to kind of, you know what the old time way is. You know, when you said something earlier and we were talking about, I just keep coming back to that shift, because here's what I also thought about. You know, there was a time in America where most black people, speaking politically here, and you deal with this also in the book with the political structure, and we'll get into that in our next show. But there was a time that most black people were not only Christian in America, most black people were also conservative and Republican. So now you have to ask yourself, how did we shift there? Go right ahead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. But again, this is the result of being brainwashed. Being brainwashed.
How and through what realm? Robert, how and through what realm are black people, what takes a group of people who were predominantly Republican, conservative, and Christian to now where they're predominantly liberal, democratic, like you said, even maybe even socialist? What happened? Was it just Hollywood? Tell me, let's get into that.
Well, we will talk about this probably in the next segment. Yeah, Hollywood had a lot to do with it. It had a lot to do with it. And I could go into it in a little bit more detail because I have a list of things that would probably make more sense to the list. Okay. But fundamentally, it goes back to the same thing in the Bible. Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life.
Mm-hmm.
This was presented to black people, okay, especially black males, who were told, hey, fellas, you're not happy. You're not really happy. You're not even equal to these people who are oppressing you. And what happened is that people of the kind of mentality were looking for, how can I say, proletariat to fight their battle against Western civilization. So, classic communism is an economic-based system devoid of God, where the selling point is equality and fairness across the board. Now, if you're told something enough times, you'll believe it. Now, coming up, I kept hearing, especially in the 60s, that black people were not equal, inferior, or something that made them unhappy. Okay, they're supposed to be unhappy. So they turned their ears to people who had an agenda promising some sort of utopian type of existence on Earth. And as I said earlier, the object is on Earth is that there's supposed to be a fair amount of suffering, not to be confused with torture now, but there's a fair amount of long suffering, self-denial, things that we're talked about in the book of Galatians, for instance, things like the fruits of the Spirit, so to speak. But black people turn their ears to people that made Christianity and certain white males villains. Anything that was authoritarian in nature, because this is your villain, because this is the person that's he's oppressing you. He doesn't see you as an equal. And until we get rid of this guy, you won't know what true freedom and equality really is.
Okay, but where did that come from, Robert? Did that come from like our children's public schools? Did it come from our universities and colleges? Did it come from our rap music? Where did that come from?
Absolutely. You hit on every one of them. You hit on every one of them because the revolution that is taking place as a cultural revolution. You're absolutely right. In 1933, the public school system was basically one of the permanent institutions that was set up for corruption. That's exactly right. To tell stories that were simply not true about what Christianity basically has to do. You're absolutely right. I have a thing that we'll explain probably as we talk later. This phenomenon they put in place called decade progression to regression. Meaning that since 1933, these masterminds, every decade, have decided to remove something from our permanent social institutions, like it's church, marriage, education, and so on. And if something's missing, then something is not passed down to a future generation, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So something from the 30s wouldn't be passed down to people in the 40s. Something in the 40s wouldn't be passed down to kids in the 50s. Something in the 50s wouldn't be passed down to things in the 60s. Again, like in my story, that's in 1969, there was a term that came up that was brought up with a really catchy term called a generation gap. And I have to admit, at the time, I didn't understand what that meant. I thought it meant, older people didn't understand the insight of younger people. That's what I thought it meant.
Mm-hmm.
But it meant opposite. It meant that something wasn't passed down from the older generation to the younger generation, which was crucial for passing on tradition. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there was the void space was being created with every subsequent decade. So that, as you know, that when you have void space, something will occupy that space. Well, if it isn't traditional values and beliefs, then you get other things that will fill that void space.
Robert, so let me jump in because we've got about 2 minutes left. So let me just throw this out real quick on the table for our audience. So I'm hearing you talk about that progression, but yet there's that regression. So with each and every decade, each generation of kids is coming up with something a little bit different. Some people would argue, and I've got to throw out the other thought, school of thought here. Some people will argue, well, Robert, isn't that what it's all about? Is that we should be evolving and moving forward to the next level? Some people would argue, Robert, and I want you to address this before we wrap it for today. Some people would argue with you, if the generations are not moving forward, then in so many ways, Black people would still maybe be even in slavery right now if there were not the generations learning something a little bit better and a little bit different and higher than what the former generations. Can you address that?
Yes, Pat. Okay, what you're talking about is a progressive society. Okay, in progressive society, what I'm talking about, this decade progression to regression. Okay, nothing new under the sun. Okay,
mm-hmm.
No, that's not true that a progressive society is the best for society. Again, you're going to regress because you're moving away from what will cause an advancement, okay? We have two concepts here. There's a progressive society and a society who's advancing, okay? The society who's advancing is being compelled by higher things, higher order functions, spirituality, okay? Morals, beliefs, virtue. Regression thing, what they're saying is that if I give you these things, you will be happy. But what's happening is that you will step back. You will move away from God. You will descend back to the more primitive ways of thinking. Black people wouldn't have been slaves that people followed the tenets of the Bible. Okay, but remember, what made black people slaves is what we want. Money, we want wealth, we want power. We're looking for the easiest way to do it, and the easiest way to do it is to enslave people, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they follow the ways of Christ, and people would not have been enslaved, okay? But if you move away from God, yes, you will, the pendulum will tilt back towards some form of slavery. I don't care if it's necessary slavery or actual slavery. That is what decade progression to regression.
Okay, so do you think we're in slavery right now, Robert?
That's
right now?
That's exactly right. Think about it. In midst of plenty, the greatest economy the world has ever seen, we have more people on drugs, tranquilizers, like you said, the families are broken up. We have kids who don't know what the hell they are as far as their gender. We have people that are doing everything on earth, they're still not happy, okay? So apparently, this progressive society is not working. It's not working, okay? Mm. And we know that. In the midst of it, in the midst of plenty, you have the most depressed society that ever existed on earth, okay? So, but if you would follow the wisdom that's in that Bible, then you would have the most content people on this message that the world is empty. But you have adversaries who do not want people to understand their truth. You have adversaries who don't want people to understand their truth. That's
absolutely. Robert, they're giving me the red flag here. Okay, because we went over our 30 minutes and I wanted to. They're giving me literally a red flag. So, Robert, let's stop it right there. We know that we're going to bring you back for part two to continue the episode discussing your book, Riddle of Oz. If you can, tell our audience where they can get the book right now.
Yeah, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, there'll be on some other sites, but Amazon right now, Amazon and Barnes & Noble website, you know, check it out. You know, we have a little synopsis of what the book is about. Listening to these discussions, I think, will give you more and more insight of where we're trying to take this message.
Awesome. Robert, listen, thank you so very much. God bless you. Listen, thank you for taking out time this Sunday afternoon. Oh, it's my pleasure. We'll have you back again. And listen, let me just sign off with our audience. Guys, thank you so very much for listening, tuning in to Bold Talk Radio. We really appreciate your time this afternoon. And we thank you guys so much. And as I said, please, if you get an opportunity, go over to Amazon, go over to Barnes & Noble's website, pick up Robert A. St. Thomas' book, Riddle of Oz. Very fascinating book, as you all can tell. And we will have Robert back with us on four more episodes to really get into depth of his book. So thank you so much for listening to Bold Talk Radio. I'm your host, Pat Williams. And until next time, I'll see you.